Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night on a Monday night. Like always, we're always on Monday night following the Paul Feinbaum Show. Dalton Erwig, Corey LeBounty, and joined by my buddy Tim Gold tonight. Tim, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, buddy.
Corey, how was your weekend?
Outstanding week. Just ready for another exciting night of Sports Night.
Yeah. And we are in the home stretch in football. Corey, you'll be covering some high school playoff games this week, round one, right?
Ready and excited. It's winter go home time. The regular season has concluded, and it's now time to chase that blue map that's going to be played at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
And in college football, we are past week 10 and to the point in the year where we see the initial college football playoff committee rankings, their first rankings of the year come out tomorrow night. It'll be interesting to see. I think we know who the top three teams will be. For sure we know who the top four teams will be, but in what order they place LSU, Alabama, Ohio State, and I guess you could add Clemson into that mix, where the committee will place them tomorrow. For one thing, it does a lot for this weekend's game with LSU and Alabama playing each other. We do know that the Associated Press top 25 rankings came out yesterday, and with those top three teams all on byes, they stayed the same this week, and that sets up for a game of the century Saturday in Tuscaloosa. The undefeated LSU Tigers, the undefeated Alabama Crimson Tide in Bryant-Denny Stadium. Man, I am so ready for this game. I can't tell you how much I'm prepared to watch this game go down Saturday afternoon.
I mean, you just want to know, is Tua going to be healthy? That's the question mark, and that's the difference in this game to where the line can go one way or the other if you like those type of wagers. But again, Dalton, what a tremendous matchup. 1-2. Alabama LSU ranked 1-2. I think I read somewhere where this is the highest amount of times you've had 1-2 as far as Alabama and LSU is concerned in the country, 1-2s. So you just think that Alabama, in order to be successful, wants and needs a healthy Tua, but we'll talk about that later on. Excited about 1-2.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot about that game later on. Also, the Florida-Georgia matchup that went down this last weekend and puts Georgia in a good spot to win the SEC East and represent that side of the conference in Atlanta coming up at the end of the year. But we'll start our headlines tonight with a couple bits of information about that LSU-Alabama game coming up this weekend. And Tua Tagovailoa, he was on the practice field last Wednesday. Coach Nick Saban then said it was a limited practice, and even at that point he said that Tua would be a game-time decision for this game coming up on Saturday. Well, today Nick Saban updated that status, still says that Tua, if he plays at all, will be a game-time decision going into the game on Saturday. But what they're going to do this week at the quarterback position is let Mac Jones, who started the last game, going to let Mac Jones and Tua Tagovailoa split reps as starters. Corey, as a Bama expert, what's your take on that, splitting reps this week? What do you think that means for Tua's availability Saturday?
I think it just means you never know if Tua comes and tweaks that ankle at all. If somebody makes a tackle at his feet, a legal tackle at his feet, then anything can happen. You have to be prepared, the next man up syndrome. You want to get that rhythm. You understand that Mac Jones only had the Arkansas game really to do so because he was thrown into the fire against Tennessee and just didn't have that opportunity to get the type of confidence he needed. So this will give it to him at practice, get the receivers and the running backs all on one accord. So I like it.
LSU dealing with some adversity also. It was announced today by the head coach, Ed Orgeron, that star linebacker Michael Divinity no longer with the team. Now, the initial report said that it was a conduct issue, and we've seen him sit out three of the team's eight games so far this year. Of course, the games that he sat out were games that LSU probably wouldn't have lost unless they had their fourth-string quarterback in. They had him in the important games, but he didn't play in the other games, and part of that was conduct, I think. But today when Ed Orgeron took the podium, he said that it was a personal decision that Divinity left the team. And even though he's only played 5 of the 8 games, he's a huge part of that defense, still leads the team in sacks with 3, and with LSU we see a lot of players with a few sacks, not a few players with a lot of sacks, but Divinity's still the sack leader and has 23 tackles this year, 10th most on the team. Pretty big loss for LSU's defense going into this game.
I think any time you look at 1 year ago, their linebacker, I think, was suspended for a half against Alabama. But I want to go back to what you talked about, Tua's injury. Last year, Jalen Hurts did not play against LSU and was unavailable because he had surgery and he was rehabbing. So when Tua got quickly injured, Mac Jones had to take a couple of snaps with the Crimson Tide. So that's nothing new from an Alabama standpoint, but anytime you lose one of your better players on defense, it always is a factor.
We've seen our first coach axed this year, Willie Taggart, out at Florida State. It was announced yesterday, and he's one from this crop of 2-year coaches. You know, a lot of coaches were hired last year that were expected to at least carry on how well some of these blue chip programs have done over the years. And Willie Taggart, one of those. He went to Florida State from Oregon, now out after only 21 games as the head coach, and losing 27-10 to your rival across the state, the Miami Hurricanes, that'll do it to you fast, especially when that Hurricanes team hasn't been very good this year.
$17 million. Pay me to stay at the house. Fire me. Go ahead. I'll be removed for $17 million, the second largest buyout behind Charlie Weiss's buyout at Notre Dame. But I tell you what, Coach Taggart, he's not going to lose any sleep about this. He handled it graciously, and kudos to him. I mean, I just think it takes longer than a year and a half to really get your program under you. If you're not winning in year number 3 at this time, absolutely pull the plug. But what are the direction is Florida State going to go in? That's the biggest question.
It's a really good question. Tim, you watch any Florida State this year?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I used to follow them. Gosh, back Charlie Ward, Danny Cannell, you know, Warwick Dunn, that group of guys, and follow them through the national titles. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, too, because Urban Meyer gets tossed in there, and a couple of them get tossed in the right. And it's got to be, well, like Taggart was at, what was he, at USF? And then he went to Oregon for a year, and then they bring him on to Florida State, and he gets a year and a half, and they send him out. I mean, you got to have somebody that'll bring in players. It's got to be an NFL guy, right? It has to be. Because otherwise, you're going to give somebody from a mid-level conference. I mean, maybe the guy from Boise State, but somebody, you have to win big games. I mean, in the ACC, it's only about big games, yep. And there's only a couple of them. So you got to get players in order to do that, and they've always done that. And Jimbo did that. But, I mean, I don't know what the problem is. Is it facilities or what's the deal? Like,
it's not facilities. Okay. There's no way it's facilities with Florida State money being thrown around.
Yeah, I mean, and there's plenty of players, but somebody's got to be able, like, why was Ron Zook any good at Illinois? Right? He was in the NFL and he could get guys to come and play for him. He couldn't coach him, right? Like, that was proven in Florida, but his players won a title with Urban Meyer. So that's probably where they got to go.
And you mentioned a couple of names being thrown around there. Urban Meyer's one. His name's been mentioned at USC also, but maybe a guy from the XFL. I know Bob Stoops has also been mentioned as a possibility for that job.
He's not from the XFL, though.
He's heading to the XFL.
I know. I forget about that.
The XFL is real, and we will all acknowledge that it's real. And wrapping up the headlines here, NASCAR season nearing its very end, and Kevin Harvick yesterday wins the Texas 500, third year in a row. He's won that fall race in Texas, and that secures a spot for Harvick in the championship race coming up in Miami in 2 weeks. He started at the top of the pole, led 119 laps, and finished there in the front. So he has locked in a spot there. Martin Truex Jr. has also locked in one of those 4 spots. That leaves next week at Phoenix. And after that, it is the championship race with 4 drivers racing for that title. Exciting time in NASCAR right now. Very exciting time in football. And we get back here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. We'll take a look at that Florida-Georgia game from Saturday. Also some more of these SEC games that were played. And coming up later this hour, It's going to be awesome. Basketball is on the way. Wednesday night, the South Alabama Jaguars men's basketball team gets the season started against Pikeville. We're going to talk with head coach Richie Riley. And tomorrow night, the women's team, Corey, they get their season started with a big game, right?
Hall of Famer Vivian Stringer brings her Rutgers program to Mobile, Alabama to play South Alabama Lady Jaguars.
All right, it's that time of year. All the sports are going on, and I love it. Sports Night coming back on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. And week 10 in the college football season has now come and gone. We got a big game coming up this Saturday in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But this last Saturday was all about Jacksonville, Florida, and the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. They don't call it that anymore. I know we do here, though. Right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, exactly.
And I guess Florida had more cocktails than Georgia did before the game. The Bulldogs, even though it was a close game, seemed like they had a pretty good grasp of it from the start. And what was basically a college football playoff elimination game with both teams coming into the game with one loss saw Georgia take control of the SEC East race with that 24-17 win. They've now won three in a row over Florida. And for me, Corey, Tim, it was all about, and a guy that I've harped on a lot, who I have called a game manager, I don't think he's going to be an NFL starting caliber quarterback, Jake Fromm, sure looked good against Florida this year, just like he did last year. And it was all about third down for me. Georgia, 12 for 18 on third down, while Florida, they didn't get their first third down of the game until about 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That Georgia offense was able to just move the sticks when it counted and score in the end when it counted.
I think momentum earlier in the game, when you're looking at Florida Gators having maybe second down and 1 yard to go, and the Georgia Bulldogs turn them back, and then a turnover on downs a couple of plays later by the Florida Gators kind of set the tempo as to exactly what kind of game this was going to be. I mean, it's 3-0 at the end of the first quarter, and then we had an explosion, in air quotes, 10 points scored by the Georgia Bulldogs in the second quarter, only 3 for Florida, making it 13-3 at halftime. But the rushing game was what really made the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia did an outstanding job of limiting the Florida Gators' rushing offense. I mean, they only had 21 total yards of rushing offense on 19 carries. That's not going to get it done in the SEC, period.
No. And, you know, Florida did a pretty good job of hemming in the Georgia running game for a while. Now, towards the end of the game, Swift started to pick up more yards and kind of iced the game a little bit. But the Florida defense held in there for a little while. One thing I really noticed is those five stars that keep going on the line at Georgia, it's starting to really pay off as they've gotten more and more experience, because even with Zuniga and Greenard back for Florida in this game, two of their best rushers, they weren't moving the pocket at all. Fromm had all day to throw and was making accurate throws down the field, especially the one play where he didn't even have to make an accurate throw. He had that, Cager. He had Lawrence Cager wide open down the left sideline, and hit him in stride, ran in from 51 yards, made it a two-score game there in the fourth quarter. But even if you take that play out, Fromm had plenty of time to throw, and that line looked outstanding against a Florida defense that's been giving people fits this year.
I think Cager was the difference. I mean, 7 receptions for 132 yards with the touchdown. You mentioned that long one for 52 yards. That's the difference. I mean, and exactly what you wanted to happen if you're a Georgia Bulldogs fan, to go ahead and control the SEC East again. And mm-hmm. This is the game that always pretty much decides that. If you're these two teams, you want the world's largest outdoor cocktail party to mean that. And that's exactly what this game meant.
And if Georgia wins out, and including the SEC title game, whether they play LSU or Alabama, they have a good chance at making it back to the playoff if they win out. And I don't know if they have a good chance to win out. They've got some tough games coming up, including against the Auburn Tigers. But before we start talking about the playoff four and we get our first committee rankings tomorrow night, I do want to say, on the Florida side of the ball, it's too bad they couldn't run, because I thought that Kyle Trask, for what he had to work with, was outstanding on Saturday night. Some of the throws he was making, his receivers weren't getting any separation, and I could not believe they were able to that he was able to find the windows that he was finding. I mean, he was hitting some very, very tight spots, making it so that his receivers had to come down with the ball. He ended up only throwing for 257 yards, but he had two scores. A lot of those passes he made looked like NFL-caliber windows that he was throwing into, and I don't think it was Trask's fault that Florida lost that game.
No, you can't put it on his shoulders. It's just a situation where, again, Florida just was not able to muster up enough rushing the football and able to get the first downs when they needed to and being able to get the stops when they needed to because Georgia was able to bleed out the clock. And, you know, Kadarius Toney was highlighted on the CBS broadcast as coming back, and I was hoping he would be the a difference maker in the game, again, with him prepping at Blount High School, but was not able to do so. So you just hope that he continues to heal and is able to make a difference later on in the season.
Got to be tough to come back. It was an arm injury that knocked him out week two, and even if he's 100% healthy, coming back after all that time being on the sidelines, tough to jump into a game as big as that one was in Jacksonville on Saturday. So we have the playoff rankings, the first ones of the year, coming out tomorrow night, and by my count, going through the conferences right now, I've got 12 teams that could possibly get in. Now, some of those are extremely long shots, but if you look at the SEC, I think it's safe to say we're down to three teams that could possibly make it into the playoff. You've got LSU, who's ranked number one in the AP poll, Alabama at two, and Georgia, who's ranked sixth right now. Those three teams could get in. Georgia's going to have to run the table. LSU or Alabama, for sure, whoever wins the conference out of those three teams will get in, but it's possible we see a one-loss team make it in. In the Big Ten, you also have three teams eligible right now. Ohio State, who at times looks like the best team in the nation. Penn State, who's still undefeated. They're ranked fifth in the poll right now. And then, surprise, surprise, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, still undefeated. I don't know how they would do it, but if they ran the table and went undefeated, we could possibly see Minnesota in the playoff at the end of the year. Unfortunately for them, three of their next four games are against ranked teams, and that's starting against Penn State this coming weekend. For the ACC, would you guys say Clemson the only team that could possibly get in from the ACC? And that's if Clemson loses, I don't think you can put them in, right? There's no way with the weakness of that schedule in the conference.
Is there anybody else in that conference this year?
I think I heard Duke plays in that conference, Florida State, but they just fired their coach. I honestly, right now, I think Wake Forest is second. I can't name the second place team right now.
Well, you're going to find out how much weight being the defending champ is going to actually carry if they get beat, or actually if they don't. Because, I mean, really, you're Clemson and everybody's like, oh, you're not in the top four. Like, okay. Right. I mean, that's sure. That you can just believe that. But, you know, if they win every game, you still got the crown.
Yeah. But they have looked like a championship contender this last month. They're playing nobodies, but they're putting up points and points and points against those nobodies. Corey, have you moved them up at all in your rankings? I know for a while you had them at number one, even through that tough stretch they had, because, hey, they're the defending champs. They still got a great quarterback, great running back, some receivers. Where do you have them now?
I still have them in top four without question. I still think they come in at number three for me. I just think that, again, their opponents are not that great in the ACC, and they're going to continue to run through it and should not have any problems. I don't think they're as strong as they were a year ago, but I still think that they are a top four team.
In the Big 12, two teams now that could get a shot to play. Oklahoma, who of course suffered that terrible upset loss at Kansas State a couple weeks ago, 48-41. They would be the top contender right now in the Big 12. And then look at Baylor. Baylor is making their name this year. They're undefeated still, I believe, but they've got some tough games coming up, a huge stretch. They've got at TCU, then Oklahoma at home, and Texas at home. But Baylor, another team, kind of like Minnesota, a team that not a lot of people were talking about at the beginning of the year, but if everything goes right for them, and they still need a lot to go right, they could find a way to sneak into the playoff if they're able to win out.
Georgia, again, I want to go back to what you said about Georgia. Georgia losing early, I said it a couple of weeks ago, was okay. And you look at Oregon sitting out in the top 25 right now at number 7. Yeah. They're hating that they lost to the Auburn Tigers. So if you ask me, can a one-loss SEC team get in? If Alabama loses to LSU or if LSU loses to Alabama, can that one loss, if you go on to win the SEC championship, still get you in? Yeah, you're going to have to sit on your hands and wait on it for a little while. But I still think that if either one of them run the table, Alabama and or LSU, they're going to find a spot in that top four.
And I wonder if Tua doesn't play this week, and I'm not making excuses. I know a lot of Auburn fans and other SEC fans will say, look, they're already making excuses for when they lose this week. Hey, I'm not a Bama fan. I'm a Tennessee Vols fan. If you placed me with any team in the conference, it would for sure be the Tennessee Vols. So you know how I feel about Bama most weeks. But if Tua doesn't play this week and LSU wins the game and then Bama wins out the rest of their schedule, which still have a tough game coming up against Auburn, is that enough to get them in the conference? It's like, hey, they get them in the playoff. Hey, they lost a game, but their best player and a possible number one draft pick didn't dress out for that game.
Sure it is, because, again, if Tua sits or plays based on what he's able to do, let's say Tua does play as effective, Alabama wins, okay, you have no problems there. But if Tua sits or is injured, and then you give him another 3 to 4 weeks to go ahead and rehab, and you know Tua's going to be healthy because he's not going to play in the SEC championship game, you give him over a month and a half to get healthy, I think that draw and that lure is just too much. And I think that will allow Alabama to get in.
You mentioned Oregon and their loss to Auburn to start the season. The Ducks fans right now have to be the biggest Auburn Tigers fans in the country that aren't wearing the orange and blue on the weekends, because they need Auburn, in order to beef up Oregon's resume, they need Auburn to beat Georgia here in a couple weeks and then win the Iron Bowl against Alabama. That'll do a whole lot for Auburn's resume, which in turn makes that loss for Oregon look a little bit better. Do you see, let's talk about the top four teams. You got LSU and or Bama, Ohio State for sure getting in, or Penn State, whoever wins the Big Ten, Clemson for sure getting in. Do you put Oregon in or maybe Utah in over a second SEC team right now?
Well, okay, so can Auburn get in if they win out?
Not with two losses.
They can't win the SEC West with two losses, right? I mean, too much has to legitimately happen for them to actually get into the SEC title game, right?
I'm not sure if they could get into the title game. I don't think so, not with the two losses. But, and they for sure won't get into a playoff with two losses.
Well, but if they you're talking about them beating Georgia and Alabama consecutively. I mean, back to back. So those are two better wins than probably everybody else would have.
Agreeably so.
So if somehow Auburn wins out, that gives you a better shot. You're going to take a two-loss Auburn team than you're going to take, because then it doesn't matter for Oregon, right? Because the head-to-head, it's over.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I think Oregon's probably better off with them, like Auburn kind of going shaky through the rest of the season, because like the Alabama LSU game, the score actually matters in that game. Like,
yes.
It doesn't really matter most of the time. This is a game where it matters. Like, cause if one of the teams smokes the other one, then it leaves less of a, or more of a doubt. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, they're going to be in. We're not going to get both. Right.
Yeah.
So I think score matters this week for once.
I think it does too. Again, I know that the playoffs weren't in effect when Alabama lost 9-6, but you still saw Alabama having an opportunity to smoke LSU in the national championship game and get payback because of it. And whether the playoffs were in effect or not, people hadn't forgotten that.
Hey, let's talk a little bit more about that LSU-Bama game when we get back. Also, a little NFL talk. And coming up in about 20 minutes, head coach of the South Alabama men's basketball team, Richie Riley.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey Labounty, special guest Tim Gold in tonight. And we do take your calls and texts, 251-343-0106, and head to the phone line right now. Talk to Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Yeah, just had a quick question. I heard you talking about Clemson a minute ago. There's like zero chance of them leaving, getting left out if they go undefeated, or maybe even if they have one loss, I think, just because they're national champs. But my big question was, why was CBS, I believe it was CBS, or could have been ESPN, running highlights of that, you know, every time they would score against Wolford? I mean, that was... I mean, I didn't realize just how weak that schedule was.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Wake Forest is serviceable this year, but it's almost like against high school teams out there. And I think they've got another really bad opponent that I can't remember who it is. I don't know if they got it coming up or they've already played something like a Presbyterian college or something.
Jeff, they've got NC State coming up this weekend, and Clemson only favored by 32 points in that matchup. And then you have the team you mentioned there, ranked Wake Forest, coming up the week after that. That'll be the only ranked team they've played since beating Texas A&M in week two of the year. So you're right, that schedule's incredibly weak, but it would be doing, I think, them a disservice and the rest of the nation a disservice if they didn't put them in the playoff just because of what they did last year on top of that.
Exactly. But I just thought that was weird. I mean, why are they even bother putting these highlights on TV here against Wolford?
I have no idea. And
nothing
I do
against Wolford, but you know what I'm saying.
I hear you. And thanks for the call there, Jeff. And I have buddy who we were texting before the games on Saturday, and he has recently – he lives out west, but he's taken – on to that. He likes putting a little bit of money on sports, which I've been known to do here and there. And he said, I think I'm going to take a shot on that Wofford money line. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing that? And he said, I don't know, it's a big payout if they win. And I said, they're not going to win. That happens once every how many years? And that payout that you're looking at there, just it's not going to happen, buddy. I think he went ahead and put the money on it anyway, and he lost that money. That's what he gets.
I mean, you look at Clemson's schedule again. Charlotte was the other opponent that they played earlier in the year that just is not that great of a football team. They're 2-2 in that game when they played earlier in the year. But Clemson, I think they are in. I mentioned Dalton. I felt to be the man, you had to beat the man.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson, to me, again, just their schedule and the way that they struggled against North Carolina, to me, cost them traction that they did have. If they continue to dominate their week schedule, blow Carolina out by 30 or 40 the same way they did Wofford, there's no problem with it.
And what team do you think Alabama wants to see more than any other team in the nation once we get into the playoffs?
I want them to have Clemson, and I know they want to see Clemson, but at the same time, I think Alabama wouldn't mind seeing Oklahoma and Jalen Hurts, too.
That's a really good point. Quickly, we got to get to the LSU-Alabama game coming up this weekend, because coming up this next segment, talking to South Alabama men's basketball coach Richie Riley. Corey, how are you feeling going into this game? If Tua plays, I'm going to go ahead and assume that Tua plays, and I'm also going to go ahead and assume that he's not at 100%. And so much of Bama's offense relies on not exactly Tua running the ball, but the threat of Tua running the ball. How do you think his injury plays into this game?
It's huge. It's the difference in the game. I mean, because, again, Mac Jones has four NFL wide receivers to throw to. So you cannot question that. It's just going to be a matter of can this young Alabama defense halfway through the season really grow up and find a way to neutralize and stop LSU's running game? Because, yes, Joe Burrow is a Heisman Trophy candidate, and he's the leading candidate if you ask me. But if you're able to bottle up this LSU running game, you want that test if you're Alabama's secondary to see if he can beat you throwing the football. Shut down LSU's run game, and if LSU's able to shut down Alabama's running game, then that's going to be the winner of the contest.
That's I mean, this is just a heck of a matchup. We're a far way away from that 2011 matchup that ended 9-6 Bama's way in overtime. We're talking about two of the best offenses in the entire nation. I can't wait for this game. I think Bama's got to kind of run the Auburn defense that Auburn shut down's a strong word, but they slowed down LSU's offense when they played lots of man-to-man and some good pressure on Joe Burrow. I think Alabama wins this game tight if Tua Tagovailoa plays. Coming up, we've got our interview with South Alabama head coach Richie Riley. Their season starts on Wednesday against, who are they playing, Corey? What's the name of the team? Pikeville. That's right. But they got Auburn coming up in 2 weeks, or next week. Huge game.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night on a Monday. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you. And Corey, we have finally gotten to that time of year. College football is in the back stretch. That means that the 2019-2020 college basketball season is upon us. Starts tomorrow night with a bunch of games, but we all know the real season doesn't start until the South Alabama Jaguars hit the court, and that'd be Wednesday night at the Mitchell Center against Pikeville. And pleasure to be joined tonight by those same South Alabama Jaguars, the head coach, Richie Riley. Hey, Coach, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you guys inviting me on. Hopefully I'll do okay, and this won't be the last.
No doubt about it, Coach. Again, you're looking at an exciting 2019-2020 season. Your motto has been burn the boats, and what you did was hit the ground running 1 year ago here at South Alabama, and you just had a passionate press conference from the beginning, high-energy type team. I have the best seat in the house at the scores table each and every game that you play to see that type of energy that you coach with, because it's encouraging to your players. It's also contagious, Coach. Talk to us about this 2019-2020 season.
Yeah, we're excited about it. I think there's a lot of expectation. You know, we got here 598 days ago, and when we had our press conference, we talked about, you know, that we didn't have a 3 to 5 year plan. We wanted to become relevant and build a program that sustained success, and We've kind of done the first part. We've recruited well. We got the guys we inherited a lot better, and that's, you know, a statement to our players. The guys we inherited have worked really hard to get better, and then the guys that signed on turned down, you know, a lot of really, really good options at the Power 5 level because they believed in what we were talking about. So where we are is a big-time statement for our players, but we're excited, man. It's an awesome time, but again, we haven't won a game yet, and I stress that all the time. Anytime you guys listen to me, is we've not won yet. I know that we're picked to win the league, and there's a lot of great press about us, but we have to go out and earn that. And we're working every day towards that. Our approach hasn't changed. We work constantly with a chip on our shoulder, and we come out every day knowing that we got to go earn the right to be picked to win.
Three of the seniors, Coach, that returned this year, each averaged over 10 points a game last year, in Trey Mitchell, Josh Ajayi, and Herb McGee. And then you mentioned the transfers. You got three more transfers coming in that also averaged over 10 points a game. That's a lot of offense that'll be hitting the court at the Mitchell Center. Give us a preview. How would you like this offense to look when you're firing on all cylinders?
We do. I think we're the only team in the country with five guys that average 14. I guess Trey technically averaged 13.8 or 13.9, but 14 a game, five guys at Division I institutions, which is a lot of firepower. Mm-hmm. We always play with an extreme level of unselfishness. So even though we have all those guys who are used to putting up a lot of points, we play really together, and we take a lot of pride in turning down good shots to get great ones. And all my teams have always had great value of the basketball. And we've had balanced scoring. Last year we had five guys average double figures, which is the first time it's been done here since I think Coach, one of Coach Arrow's teams, his first time around. So this team will be no different. We really have six starters, is what I tell everybody. Is, you know, those three guys that you named, Mitchell, Ajayi, and McGee, and then you look at Chad Lott, Don Coleman, and Andre Fox. We got six starter level guys, and Ianni's in there close to that somewhere. He'll be a great backup for Josh Ajayi. Josh Ianni was a starting center at St. Bonaventure on our NCAA tournament teams. So we've got really good depth. I think we're going to be 8 to 9 deep. I think our tempo will be a lot faster, more like what we were at Nicholls State in year two, where we were top four in America in tempo played. I think we'll be up there again very high. And I think it'll be a fun product to watch because we're going to rip and run. And, you know, if we put the ball in the basket, we're going to score a bunch of points. We get a lot of shots, though.
I know one of the things you like to do is defend well as well. And also, Coach, you look at redshirt Don Coleman coming from Cal. He's the transfer, pick third team, preseason all-conference. But he averaged 14.2 points in the Pac-12 conference. And that's a benefit to him having a year redshirting underneath your program along with some of the other guys, just seeing your new system. And now when it's time for them to be eligible to play, talk about the benefits of that.
Yeah, he got a lot better. First of all, I want to commend him. He got a lot better. He kind of turned himself into more of a point guard. At Cal, he was, you know, his efficiency was low, kind of a volume guy because they didn't have a whole lot to go around him. So he took a lot of tough shots, and we knew that. And every kid we set out, guys, I love transfers. I think it's obvious what the model we have. But when they set out, it's an unbelievable opportunity to get them better. We really hone in on the things they need to get better at, and we go to work on that. And he and Fox and Ianni have drastically improved. I think you saw that in the Mississippi State game with Fox having 30, which was big time. And Don grew as a point guard. And, you know, he'll have that on his shoulders a lot of the time this year as being the primary handler, especially in our transition push. But, you know, we take a lot of pride in getting those guys. That's how we've been able to beat a lot of Power Fives, to get transfers, because it's kind of our brand. And they've seen the improvement guys have had from our time at Nicholls State and our time here so far. And guys want to come be part of that and try to improve their game where it gives them a chance to do something special.
Well, what's special and what has improved is the Mitchell Center, our brand new floor, LED lighting, new paint job. I mean, just a lot of excitement around the Mitchell Center and the program. And you look at your schedule. You're bringing in on Saturday, November 9th, you have Southern Mississippi, and then Tuesday, November 12th, you have the Auburn Tigers coming to town. You open up again tomorrow night against Pikeville, but talk to us about the excitement about your schedule, the conference, non-conference schedule, as well as your schedule that's going to be at home in the conference.
Yeah, first of all, you talked about our facility, the Mitchell Center. Hopefully everybody gets out on Wednesday night. Well, hopefully everybody gets out tomorrow night and sees Terry and our women play Rutgers. It's going to be a big-time environment. And then come back out on Wednesday to watch us play Pikeville. The Mitchell Center renovations, Dr. Erdman and our whole administration did an incredible job. It's a high-major venue, I'm telling you. Like, I coached in the ACC, and it's really, really, really nice, man, like comparing it to some of the arenas in that league and in the SEC. It's right there with a lot of them, and that's a statement of our administration, the work that they've done. But our conference schedule is going to be really challenging. It starts off, a lot of people overlook this Pikeville game. They're number 5 in the country in AI, and they're essentially a Division I team. They've got 4 to 5 guys that could play at plenty of Division I programs, their main 4 or 5 guys. So it's going to be a heck of a challenge. They're used to winning, man. And they're coming in here to win the game, so we got to be ready to go. And then Southern Miss is a rivalry game for us that we play every single year. Jay Ladner, I'll have them ready to go. It'll be a good one. And then the big one is always, that's everybody's, you know, my challenge is for everybody to treat Pikeville and Southern Miss just like they will Auburn. I know that's probably not going to be the case. But, you know, you got a top 25 team coming in here, coming off a Final Four. And they're a household name now, basketball-wise. It used to be only football-wise for a while, but they're a basketball household name. And hats off to Coach Pearl for what he's doing there. He does it everywhere he goes. He's the ultimate program builder. And then you look throughout our schedule, and you've got a tournament down in Florida that's going to be really good. It's a high-level mid-major tournament with us, and Murray State and Northeastern and Rice State, Weber State, a lot of teams that are picked to Drake, a lot of teams that are picked to win their league in the preseason, so it's going to be a high-level tournament. And then we got road games at Chattanooga and at Richmond, two really good teams. And, you know, we actually start conference play before Christmas, too, with App State and Coastal Carolina coming in here. So it's going to be a challenge. And we want the non-con to be tough because we got to get ready for Sun Belt play, so we'll be able to really see where our team's at by the end of it.
Coach, the team's gotten a lot of preseason accolades. Coaches, even last week, voted, I think 8 of the 12 voted South Alabama as the number one team in the conference right now. I know you've talked in the past about kind of staying focused, and you said it even in this interview earlier that you haven't accomplished anything yet this season. What's your team goal this year? Looking back, once this season has come and gone, what are you hoping to say that this team has accomplished?
Yeah, we burned the boats. That's just not something we say in our program. It's what we live by. So, you know, a lot of coaches won't say this, but we have to look back and say that we won this league. That's the ultimate burn the boats. A lot of guys will preface things by saying, you know, we want to be the best version of ourselves. you know, this and that, and we do want to be the best version of ourselves. And I think if we are the best version of ourselves at the end of the year, then we would have accomplished that goal. If not, then we won't be able to accomplish that goal. And that is the goal. We recruit to that. We work every day to that. We pride ourselves on being the hardest working team in the country, and I believe we are. I'd like to see somebody that works harder than us, in all honesty. And we chase to be great. And, you know, does that put a lot of pressure on us? Yeah, but that's what you sign up for. That's what I signed up for, and they let me be the head coach here. I say it all the time, they didn't bring me in here to finish in the middle of the pack of the Sun Belt. So I've got to figure out how that we can, you know, be right there to win it every year and find a way to win it. And that's the goal. So that's what we're striving for. And anything short of that, when I look back at it, you know, I'll be glad and blessed and fortunate to coach this great group of kids we got at a great institution. And they're all going to get their degrees and all, and that's first and foremost. But if we don't win a championship with this team and reach the best version of ourselves, then, you know, I'm certainly not going to be satisfied.
You have a lot of great guys to do that with. People that don't know, real quickly, Coach, tell people what burn the boats mean. Because when you say that, those who have never heard you say that or see it on your Twitter feed and don't understand what it means to you, can you quickly sum it up what burn the boats means?
Yeah, burn the boats is how I live. My children even say it all the time, my 5-year-old and 3-year-old son. And what it is, you know, it came from the conquistadors, Hernando Cortez, years ago. And I got it off a motivational speaker, Tony Robbins, who was speaking on it one time, and I just kind of adopted it years ago and fell in love with it. And what it is if us three got on a boat and we went, you know, took off overseas somewhere to foreign land, and we were going to take over the island. We're going to go up there and we're going to fight and take over the island. You know, if we showed up and got off our boat and went up there and started fighting and things went poorly and we were getting beat up, human nature tells anybody to retreat, to get back in your boat and come back to Mobile and write it off as a bad idea. But if when us three got there, we got torches out and we burned our boats and we got up on the island and started going to battle and things went bad, then there is no option for return. If we're coming home, we got to conquer them and come back on their boats, and that's the only way we can get back. So what it is is it eliminate all excuses, eliminate all option of failure, and you have to find a way to succeed. It's conquer, be conquered every day. And within our program, we not only from a basketball standpoint on the court, but that's academics and that's in our everyday life. We talk to our guys all the time about it in academics. You got to burn your boat. Can't show up and have an excuse all the time of, well, I would have done better on this test if this would have happened. Well, I wouldn't have been late for class if I wouldn't have had to stay up till 12:30 last night studying. There are no excuses in our program, and that's with everything we do. So I've lived my life like that. I've taken a lot of risk to be the head coach of South Alabama. I've taken some jobs making no money. I've quit jobs to go interview for other jobs. Completely burned my boat in a lot of situations. So that's something I try to carry over for our guys, and it's something that all my teams have really embraced.
Some great words to live by. It's firing me up right now, Coach. South Alabama head coach Richie Riley, thank you so much for joining us on Sports Night, and good luck to you against Pikeville on Wednesday night and the rest of the season. Hopefully we can keep up with you throughout this 2019-2020 year.
Yeah, I'd love to come on anytime you guys want to have me. Just let me know.
All right.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it very much.
That's South Alabama head coach Richie Riley, and man, I'm fired up. I'm ready for the season to start now. Looking at the best Jags team on paper we've had in a while and picked to win the Sun Belt by a lot of publications. I'm ready. Let's get this season started.
Jump ball. You need to come out November 6th and check out this South Alabama team. And if nothing else, make sure that you pack the Mitchell Center on Saturday, November 9th when they take on Southern Miss, and definitely Tuesday, November 12th when they play the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, it's going to be a packed Mitchell Center then. And that does it for this week's Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Next time we talk, there will be only one undefeated team in the SEC West. We'll have a pretty good idea of the top four in the College Football Playoff Committee because they're putting those out tomorrow night. And we'll talk about all that and a whole lot more next Monday night. This has been Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Have a great Monday night, everyone.